Hello everyone, I am Özlem Özkan from Amsterdam and I have an announcement. My book, The Students, is getting published in September 2020, so in only a month. So The Student is a memoir and self-awareness book. In The Student, I am shedding some light on my inner journey of getting to know myself. It explores a human heart and mind. The Student will take you to different parts of the world, such as Japan, where I learned about kindness, to Denmark, where I harshly faced my own judgments, to Istanbul, a city which I admire, to the airplane where I created panic attacks, and to my childhood spent in the Netherlands. This book will take you on a fascinating journey into the inner world and to things that you may have never admitted to yourself. It will make you unravel the debates of who you are. This book is definitely not a handbook about how you should live your life, but it's a travel guide through a lived life. While society is constantly presenting us with choices, you might find yourself searching for vital answers. The Student, with its universal topics, may resonate if you have ever wondered who you are. By the time you finish reading, you may have discovered new and deeper layers within yourself. In a society where we are afraid to show our true selves and try to be like someone who is anything but ourselves, The Student shows us what it can look like to break free and be your true self, coming very soon. It's Özlem Özkan, and this is Bridging, a podcast which will take you on a bridge to somewhere else, sometimes somewhere familiar, and sometimes somewhere new. In Bridging, I interview life experts with a story to share. Stories of entrepreneurship, cultural diversity, self-empowerment, personal growth, and other topics that shape our universe. I feel so privileged to have had a conversation with Kyle Cordaway. Kyle is an expert in talent development and leadership. He's a master trainer and a TEDx coach, and he is based in Illinois in the United States. He has over 25 years of experience and has helped many individuals reach their leadership goals, including many that work with Fortune 500 organizations. Kyle and I had a conversation about how a great leader could be and what it really takes to be a good leader. While talking with Kyle, we had a dive into the human psychology and the things we humans remember from a good or a bad boss.
Leadership is influencing someone towards a higher good. If leadership is just about goal accomplishment and that's it, then leadership runs the risk of becoming very self-absorbed. Even though it takes time, right? Even though sometimes we are in a hurry, even though we have a very specific idea about how we want things to be sometimes, that there could be something incredibly powerful about honing the skill of becoming curious about the people who work for us. The best leader usually takes time to understand that individual. There's also this shift that has to happen, and I think you highlighted it, which is, it's the awareness where you recognize the things that motivate someone you're leading are not necessarily the same things that motivate you.
Welcome, Kyle Cordaway. I hope I say your name right with
That's perfect.
My English. So it's really nice having you. Thank you so much for making time. I was lost in the time zone. You're in Chicago. I'm in Amsterdam.
Yes.
Seven-hour difference, right? Yeah,
Sounds right.
It's 1 a.m. there. 1 a.m.
It is 1 p.m. there. 1 p.m. here.
Oh, 1 p.m. there. And it is 8 p.m. here.
There we go. 7 hours. Yes.
Yeah, seven-hour difference indeed. So you are a partner of Ninth Edge.
It is
a company where you work on developing talents and also teach leadership in business management. So you collaborate with different companies, and you're also an educator at Korn Ferry. And you have a podcast which is called Switching the Dial. It's all about leadership. That's why we are here, about leadership. We will talk about leadership, especially for entrepreneurs. So, but actually today I'm just going to do a little bit of different format.
Okay.
Usually I start with a question around the topic, right? Leadership. But I had an evaluation this week about, hey, how shall I start a little bit differently? And I thought I'm going to start with this question.
Okay.
It might sound not related, but it's related to the whole topic, I would say.
I'll trust you.
Do you have a favorite teacher in primary school? Who was that? And why was she or he your favorite teacher?
You know, Aslam, it's interesting. If you asked me about teachers that stuck out to me, I don't know that I would have to get to high school before I could talk to you about a teacher that stuck out to me.
Really?
No, primary school, I'm not suggesting that they don't exist, and it's possibly just a limitation of my memory, but part of it probably goes to my own history, which is I grew up in one particular community until I was about 15 years old.
Yeah.
And then I moved. Moved to a new country or something. I literally just moved from Southern Illinois to Central Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I bring that up is it was a time where, and perhaps you can think about the time you were 15 years old and thinking like the whole world was ending because you had to move to a new place. And thinking this was going to be horrible, right? And it was this recognition when I moved there that I actually, so this gets to your question, which is the first person that I think about is a woman named Christine Pogue. And she was actually the guidance counselor at that high school. And the reason she comes to mind, and it would certainly connect the dot for me about why you'd ask about a teacher, is the idea that this person saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And so that's the first person that comes to mind. And honestly, the someone who took an interest in me, right? Listened to what I had to say, treated me like a human being and like, almost like treated me like an adult, right? Even though I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
Like they treated me as though I was someone who could make decisions, had the faculties about me that I could grow into whatever they saw me to be able to become.
So she saw something in you what you did not see in you back that time.
Agreed. Yeah.
Okay.
And then the powerful part about that was, if I were to make a connection to that, I would say that it's the moment. It's not suggesting that I didn't need to see something in myself, but I would make the case that one of the things that a great teacher does is they help kickstart the process, right? They sometimes create the space by seeing something you don't see to allow you to live into what you now believe is possible.
Yeah, yes.
Please, go ahead.
That there's also a saying like, it sometimes takes one person to believe in you, in something. Maybe you want to do something so much.
Sure.
But one person, what you said, the kickstart, said like, hey, you can just do it. Just do
Agreed.
It.
Agreed. So I go to that person. And I certainly had other teachers at that stage of the game, but it was almost this recognition of moving to a new place where however I thought about myself up until that point did not have to hold me back about what was possible moving forward. And so I would point to that first moment.
Mm-hmm.
The next person that I honestly point to is, believe it or not, I go all the way to graduate school.
Yeah.
And I was finishing up my undergraduate education. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't take undergraduate very seriously. I just didn't. But somewhere around like the last year of undergraduate, I got serious about things. And it just happens that this particular person was the director of graduate studies.
Yeah.
At the university I was attending, and I'd happened to take a class with him, and it was almost the exact same thing, Aslam. It was like, he just kind of said, I'll give you a chance. Like, he basically allowed me, admitted me to graduate school. And I will tell you that I look at those two moments that we just described as like very defining moments about where I would land eventually. And they were both similar stories about someone saying, I see something that's possible. You know, they were very different people, but they were both tied together by that idea. That
yeah.
They both were like, they saw something and were willing to nurture it.
It is really like a very interesting answer. Plus also, I think for me, a very related answer, because I actually asked this question to many friends of mine when we are, especially Friday evening, we're sitting, chatting on the couch. And, sure. You know, then I want to have deep conversations and I ask this question. But I have never, ever gotten an answer in a way of like, I like this teacher because she or he, taught me geography, math, or I don't know, some knowledge things, you know? It
yes.
was usually like, you know, there was this teacher, he was so into storytelling, and I loved it. He could take me from here, and I forgot all my problems, what I had at home, or something like that, or one teacher that was great in art, or it was a lot for me, like a lot of answers I got was like from my friends, like more social, emotional related than any technical skill, which is, you know, not bad.
No, of course.
But, you know, somehow in education, we focus sometimes so much on the technical skill that we have to teach, which is also important. But what really stays with human is that maybe that integrity from the other person, the authenticity, the support that you just maybe needed in your subconscious mind. You didn't know that, but that moved you forward.
It's interesting you say this. So in a number of the sessions that I teach, we ask people to reflect upon not all that different of a question that you ask, but it's almost framed like, tell me a bit about the best leader you've worked for. Tell me about the worst leader you've worked for. And and our goal is not about names, right? We're not interested in that, right? What we're interested in is, what did they do and what was the impact on you? So we've been asking this question in some way, shape, or form for I don't even know how many years. But without exception, there are some interesting themes that emerge almost. It's crazy how consistent it is. One of the very first things is when people talk about the best leader they've ever worked for, without even knowing it, they actually struggle to get specific about what that best leader did, but they are incredibly clear on how they felt working for them.
Yes. Yes.
Now, when you switch to the other side, tell me about the worst leader, they can be incredibly specific about what that worst boss did. And they can be incredibly specific about how it felt. And so it makes sense if you think about it, because I would make the case that our minds are much more wired to remember hard times, to remember stretch, to remember stress, to remember difficulty, right? We create a lot of clarity when things are difficult, right? My framing statement is the best boss, the image of a best boss is like an impressionist painting, right? You know how it feels to look at it, but you don't see every stroke.
Yes.
Thinking about a best boss is like looking at a high resolution television. The worst boss, I should say. The worst boss is the high resolution television. Like you remember, people can actually remember a difficult, painful thing they said, the exact words, where they were. Now, why do I bring that to the table? Because at some level, it connects back to what you were saying about at some level, the connection of when things are working is the experience that I have about what it's like to work for them is very social emotional. But it also brings to the challenge of being a leader, because here's the thing, if you think about it, you show up to leadership with a broad view of what works and a specific view of what doesn't.
Yes.
That is not the same as knowing what to do.
Yeah. Even more specific, what it doesn't work. So you're saying like people remember the best leader, but they actually remember the emotion they got from that leader.
That's right.
And with the worst leader, they also know what he or she did to make him feel that.
There you go. Now let's follow this thought for a second, because knowing what not to do is not the same as knowing what to do. In fact, one of the very interesting things that we find mistakes a new leader makes is they work very hard to not make the mistake the other leader made. So I'll give you an example.
Okay.
One of the themes that often comes up for people when they talk about their worst boss experience, their worst leader experience, is the phrase would be micromanager. I don't know how globally that translates.
Yes, I have to say.
Okay, good, good. It's
micromanager, I'm like, whoa.
Right. So now here's the interesting thing. What that then means, if we follow what you and I have been talking about, is that a new leader says to themselves, well, I know what I don't want to do. I don't want to be a micromanager. But here's the challenge. Most of the people that I work with are actually looking for a lot more clarity from their leaders. Mm-hmm. They want more specificity. They actually want more strategy. Prioritize. Help me understand what matters. And what's funny about that is there might be a link, which is this, that because I'm concerned about having someone experience me as a micromanager, I might give a lot more freedom to someone else in the attempt of not creating that thing.
Yeah.
But in the process, I actually lack giving them something they actually need, which is structure or guidance or direction, but for fear of it being experienced as some level of micromanagement. Now, here's the interesting thing. Micromanagement is not just too much direction. It's too much direction and crossing a line of respect at the same time. Because interestingly, there were leaders who give us a great amount of direction, but because it's what we wanted and needed, it doesn't get experienced as micromanagement. We don't even code it that way. We would never think, oh, that was micromanagement. No, they just gave us what we needed when we needed. So to make that connection point, the idea of, and it goes to one of the challenges I find helping other leaders, is to take what has been your experience up to this point. What guidepost does it point you to as a leader that you're like, this is what I care about, this is what I want to avoid? Mm-hmm. And how do we see that broadly in terms of saying, okay, and the joke I often make, Aslam, is our parents. And here's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like there are plenty of people when they have a child who say, oh, I don't want to do what my parents did.
And what do they do?
They just make different mistakes. So the interesting thing is they work really hard not to do what their parents did, but in the process, they just do other things.
Yeah.
Right? So in some ways, I hope that's actually a bit freeing in that, you know what? None of us show, and I guess I say this a lot, is if you find yourself in a position of leadership, however you define that, we're not blank slates around it. Like none of us shows up completely like, I don't know what we're talking about when it comes to leadership. We've had parents, teachers, bosses. We've had people who've fit that mold or shaped that mold up to the point that we find ourselves in that position. And we're using those people as like we're trying them on, you know?
Yeah.
How does what they're doing fit me? How does it not fit me? That sort of thing.
So, you know, and what do you think about how should a good leader be?
Well, that's a big question.
And I can imagine, by the way, it just also depends of the person that has the leader. But like, you know, if we can give an overall view, like,
yeah,
how does it look like to be a good leader?
Well, one of the questions I think most of us have to wrestle with. So I have a point of view, which is one of the challenges of leadership is actually purely language. language-based. And here's what I mean. I often say in my sessions that most of the people that we're working with, they have some, like you were describing, when you were talking about teachers, Aslam, and you were talking about kind of that technical thing that they teach, mm-hmm. you know, it's geometry or history, right? Mm-hmm. Well, by the same token, most of the leaders that I work with are going to be in some operating function within an organization, research and development, operations, commercial, mm-hmm. marketing, right? That would probably be the same thing in your example about the technical thing that the teacher brings to the table, right? They yes. all bring their area of technical expertise.
Yeah.
In all of those areas, there's a term called terminology. And terminology mm-hmm. says we identify precise language to mean specific things. For instance, my first job was in a public accounting firm. Now, I don't have a degree in accounting, but I had to understand there was certain language of finance, accounting terms. I had to understand what those things were. But the reality is when you learn a technical language, it becomes like this kind of shorthand that you and I can speak together. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It could be anything. It could be art. It could be music. Like if we understood music theory, we could immediately drop into a music theory conversation.
Yeah.
Someone who doesn't speak music theory has no idea what we're talking about.
Yes. Maybe right? It's ignored information for him or her.
Exactly. Now let's think about this for a second. Because we are very quick to understand the technical nature of the work that we do.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the nature of leadership, everybody uses all the same words and no one means the same thing. Everybody means different things by it. So we begin with a leadership challenge, which is just a language challenge. Like everyone has their own point of view on what leadership means. So let us say for a moment that a leader gets put in a position and they're finding a certain a set of demands on them that are new than what they've had to deal with before, and they're struggling. Well, I can tell you right now that something that might have been said at some stage of the game, someone would say, you know what, we need you to work on your communication skills.
Yeah.
Okay, has that clarified anything for us?
Yeah, it's such a broad thing, communication skills. Okay, right. But I think actually I communicate very well. Hey, what do you mean by that?
Sure, for example. Right? Yeah. Right? So I went from leadership down to communication. I go, oh, well, what do you mean? Well, I need you to work on your interpersonal, you know, just, you know, how you hold people accountable. Okay, we've gotten a little more specific on that.
Yeah.
But you see, the challenge that we're getting at is, for the most part, we have this challenge of comprehension and fluency. Fluency says we use all the same words, but comprehension means do we even mean the same things? So that
Indeed.
Was my way of setting up the challenge that says, the first question is what do we actually think leadership is?
Yeah.
What is it? Because
what is it?
Well, I have a working definition. And I cover in the first episode of my podcast, and I can give it to you the quickest description, which is this. Leadership fundamentally is an influencing process. That when you are leading.
It's an influencing process.
Yes. When you lead, you influence.
Yeah.
You influence others.
Yeah.
Now the question is what are you influencing them towards? And we haven't even gotten to how you influence. We haven't gotten any of that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay.
But at the
okay.
very least. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Basics.
It's me. It's somebody else, and I'm influencing you towards something. Mm-hmm. Got it? Now, I like making these two distinctions because there's a version of a description of influence which says what leaders do is they influence towards goal accomplishment or goal attainment. The idea is there's something to be done. Mm-hmm. I am a leader. One of my jobs is I'm influencing you to attain that goal. Now, mm-hmm. we could make the distinction that says that goal comes from me. That goal comes from the organization. That goal comes from you. Doesn't matter. We're basically being somewhat agnostic. It's about goal attainment, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that makes sense up to a point. And in my first episode, I bring in a quote from Ken Blanchard. And Ken is an American. He runs a large organization. But Ken is the founder of an approach called situational leadership. And by the way, it's a fine approach. I love situational leadership. There are others too.
Yeah.
But I like something in particular that Ken eventually says, and he says it in a later book that he writes. So he's written like for 40 years, he's written different books about leadership.
Yeah.
But One of the things that Ken says is leadership is influencing someone towards a higher good. Now,
towards here's, a higher good. Okay.
Yes. Now, here's why he gets there. Here's the link he makes. He says, if leadership is just about goal accomplishment and that's it, then leadership runs the risk of becoming very self-absorbed.
Yeah, because I mean, you see this in many companies, many, yes, many, many companies. That's the right. Leader, I mean, called a manager, maybe actually, maybe is has a target and has a team.
That's right.
And works with the team towards that goal.
That's right.
And the question is it going to a higher purpose or not?
Yeah. And again, I am not suggesting that the idea of goal attainment is a bad thing. But I like the idea that we at least ask the question when we're leaders, what incrementally am I leading people towards that's bigger than both of us? What am I trying to create here?
Yeah.
And so at the very least, when you ask this question of, I think it was, how should a leader be? One of the cases that I would make is most of the time, by the time someone finds themselves in leadership, it's going to be, the way I would put it is, it is a process of discovery through trial and error, meaning we will, like you're in my example of we're starting with our teachers or we're starting with our boss. What do we start with? Well, most of what we start with is we know how it felt to work for this person and we'd like to create that for other people.
Yes, yes.
We want to avoid doing these things because we know what that felt like.
Yeah.
And then for most of us, we just kind of step into it and just make a ton of mistakes along the way. And by the way, no judgment around that. I mean, that's the way we'll learn is we'll try this, we'll try that. One of the things that I think is interesting, at least in most of the organizations that I work in, is individuals who find themselves identified to be considered from a leadership perspective or to be considered as leaders, to supervise, to take over a responsibility of some kind, they generally are very good at being productive themselves individually. They're good at getting work done.
Yeah.
To lead someone else fundamentally is to try and put that work in somebody else's hands, is to try and enable other people to get that work done.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a fundamentally different exercise. So I want you to imagine for the moment that one of the challenges, you talk about leaders at the beginning, how they're going to be. I want them to at least recognize that there is this fundamental idea that says, look, if you're in the spot of being a leader, you are likely results-driven, you're action-oriented.
Yeah.
You're probably very customer-focused. You know the right questions to answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want you to recognize that if you hang on to those things too tightly, you might actually create the micromanaging problem that you and I were talking about before.
Yes.
So a way of being would be is how can I notice when those things continue to serve me? And when must I let go of some of those things and be ready to take on something new? Maybe even connecting the dot back to your question of flexibility. It's hard. Because if you think about it up to that point, I would say a lot of those folks, they've been rewarded and supported to engage those behaviors. That's how they got successful in the first place.
In the first place?
Yes.
What about the second? Long term?
Surprise. I mean, so one of the things you and I are hypothesizing is this, is that in the face of difficulty that a human's first instinct is to let go of what's worked and try something new. I think both you and I know that's not necessarily the first element.
Yeah.
As humans, I would say this, if I've got something that in my head, my story is this is what's gotten me successful. And if I encounter adversity, it's entirely likely that my first move is, I clearly haven't done this thing enough. I must do it more, right? So one thing that can hang up a new leader is that they hold very tightly to what worked in the past.
Yeah.
And they're unwilling to let go of that in search of an unknown, something that might work.
So
you have to let that go.
You know, initially, a few minutes ago, we talked about like these people the questions you ask the people, the worst and a good leader, right? And people remember the emotion they got from a good leader.
Yeah.
And from a bad leader, they remember also the action of the worst leader plus the emotion they got from it. But, you know, we are all unique. We have so many different emotions where you might feel great. I might feel like, oh, my goodness, this is not what I want, right? Sure. Like, for example, I really like direct feedback. Just tell me what is wrong. I love it so I can work on it. That's how I approach myself. But what I realized, for example, last week, I was doing a project and I worked with a colleague and I gave him very direct feedback. You know, I'm not his leader, but, you know, but you don't need to be, I believe you don't need to be a leader in order to practice leadership, right? We were working together to get a responsible for the project. And I gave him feedback like, hey, we should be much more prepared because this is... lacking or, and actually I was totally not aware of that he might feel hurt or that it came very like direct. And you know, later on we had a feedback session which I asked for. I said, hey, let's just give me further feedback, good things, what we did, and maybe something that we can work on. And I was like, just tell me too. And then he said, like, you know, when you told me that, I felt a little bit hurt and also like it was very direct and harsh. And maybe you have really high expectations from yourself, which I have, I know that. And you also expect everyone that, you know. And I have to really say honestly too, like I have high expectations. And when I work with people, the intention is also there, like, hey, I know you can do this. I know you are just, or I feel that the person is operating from a, like, not a full potential. I know he or she can do it. So because I know I need that, I'm kind of so not conscious and aware that the person might not need that, might need a totally different approach. So how are we going to solve this then? You know, you do all these collaborations, teachings, trainings in different companies. Like, how do you adjust to first to a company level and then the level, let's say a team level, and then maybe in the team an individual level? And there's maybe one leader, you know, how can it be done so that it touches more people than only one, let's say? Because I don't think you can just save the whole team, maybe. I don't know. Maybe you can.
Oh, no. I would say at some point. Well, I guess there's two things that come to mind. If I go back, remember we were talking about those lists of the best leaders and worst leaders. One theme that comes up across the best leaders is that the best leader usually takes time to understand that individual.
They
actually make the time for it. And so the question, you know, it's almost like trying to square a circle that I hear you pointing at, is the what are a set of behaviors that can actually work across a wide range of people? And what I would say is if you actually create time and space to better understand, get to know your people. Now, the question will always be is, what do you need to know? How deeply do you need to get to know them? Well, it's probably helpful to understand what energizes them, what they care about, like what brings them meaning in terms of the work that they do. I would also say that there's also this shift that has to happen, and I think you highlighted it, which is it's the awareness where you recognize the things that motivate someone you're leading are not necessarily the same things that motivate you.
Yeah.
And that tends, by the way, that tends to happen in the way that you were just describing, which is it's kind of that we just had some friction, something occurred.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it. Like, of course, we want to tell the story that says, I was thoughtful about it. I did it perfectly the first time. And I'm like, and if you want to bring that, like, I just want to say that if you want to bring that expectation in, that's going to be something that you care about, that somehow if you just, you know, map it all out, that you won't ever have those moments. What I would tell you is don't raise your hand for leadership. It's not like, I just would want to disabuse anybody of the notion that somehow some amount of mapping it all out means that you won't have, like, we won't have uncomfortable conversations, right? They're just going to happen. In fact, the levels of awareness often happen with friction, right? And the distinction is not whether those things happen. The question is do we turn it into something powerful, and do we develop a relationship as a result of it? Like you said, I mean, there's something you learn more deeply as a result of that moment. The reality is there could have been an individual who says, well, that was uncomfortable. Well, I'd like to avoid that and never have that happen again. But then we would miss out on this different awareness that there could be a different motivational source in operation going on for somebody else. So there is an element, I guess, of what I hear you describing, Aslam, which is a willingness to ask questions, a willingness to listen.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Yeah, no, keep going, please.
No, the only other thing I would add is this. I talked about beginning with the definition, right? The idea of what leadership is. And I just have one more clause, independent clause. I don't know what the grammar is on that, but that I would say is this. Leadership, for the most part, happens in conversation with others. Like, the reality is, yes, of course, I can look at somebody on the television giving some sort of speech, and I want to get this idea that they're leading in some way, shape, or form. But the reality is most everyday leadership is you talking to someone else. It's having a conversation.
Yeah. So, you know, changing into a powerful situation, what I understood, like, please correct me, like, you really need to take the time, be patient, and try to understand the person or the team.
I think if you could identify one thing, like you were saying, it's like, how can you identify an action that would work across groups, right? I think there is something powerful there that says getting into the habit of doing that will likely pay off in ways, even though it takes time, right? Even though sometimes we are in a hurry, even though we have a very specific idea about how we want things to be sometimes, that there could be something incredibly powerful about honing the skill of becoming curious about the people who work for us.
Yeah. I have to say, like, you know, I worked also in different countries. Like, when I was working in Denmark, maybe it was the culture a little bit there, you know, things also go a little bit slow paced there.
Yes.
In the company I worked for, they, you know, it was a retail company of fashion. And sometimes the questions were asked, like, you know, who is the most important part or the person thing in our company? Like, you know, and most people gave an answer, customer, of course, because if the customer doesn't buy, and they corrected us, they said, not the customer, the employees. And I really realized there, they gave us such like a kind of respect and the responsibility that we are really important and key to building the company. Because if we were not there, we couldn't make the design, the clothes, you know, we couldn't design it, we couldn't ship it, we couldn't talk to the factories, we couldn't sell it to different wholesalers. Yeah. And that was really a big thing, what I really appreciate. I have learned so much in that company. But the question, you know, what I'm a little bit with is the leader, which, you know, we had a good leader in this company. I know that. I can feel it. But what kind of prep work should a leader do in order to lead very well? You know, I am an entrepreneur. I am, I'm owning everything, doing everything myself, but I work with different teams in outsourcing. And yeah. you know, when I need to do an editing my podcast, sometimes I'm also really like impatient. I can feel it during while I'm patient. I'm like, I need to come, you know, is it finished? And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, if someone would do this to me, I wouldn't just thrive even. But each time I'm just trying to get more aware, different techniques I'm doing, a meditation or journaling to really get to understand myself.
Sure.
I believe it's a really big key to really honestly, brutally honestly, to look at yourself, your own sure. behavior, and not putting it only out there, what is happening. Yeah. But what do you think as someone with experience in this, you know, you're an expert in leadership, like what kind of prep should a good leader do back at home or outside of the workforce?
Yeah. The dot I think I'm going to connect is what you were just saying, which was the first thing I just heard you talking about is trying to become curious about your own reactions when things don't go the way you expect.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, right. Okay. Exactly.
So here's the dot I want to connect is a question I'll often ask people is, let us say you have someone that you're reporting to, that person leaves. New person comes in. Now, here's the thing. The job description, the job responsibilities didn't change. However, because you have this new person, you know that there is a different set of things they expect that are likely at least somewhat different from the last person. Now, the reason I bring that up is this. I would make the case that a way that I phrased this is this: even you can think about this now. Don't even think about this in terms of work. Like anywhere in your life, Aslam. All right.
Yeah.
Think of anywhere in your life where you are mildly irritated, all the way up to completely frustrated with.
Yes.
Just anybody in your life, right?
Yes.
And the part that I want to get at, there is actually only one reason why you are irritated all the way up to completely frustrated. It's one thing. And it's because they're not meeting an expectation
you are having. Exactly. But exactly, so it is here.
That's okay. But it's the one thing I want leaders to get is you have expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I'm going to bet some of the people you lead know things you expect you don't even realize you expect.
Yeah.
And the reason that you were talking about what can a leader do when they actually find themselves in this position is do everything you can do to start getting clear on what you expect because that's going to be dictating your reactions to things whether you know it or not.
Yeah.
And I just want to get, I want people to get used to the idea that there are a million things that they expect that they don't know that they expect, but they completely put on other people.
Yeah.
They completely ask of other people and they have reactions when they don't meet them or they react when they do, meaning they're even reinforcing those things.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a judgment. This is merely a recognition that all leaders bring some level of that which they expect to the table, whether or not they know it. Why does this matter? Well, because consciously or unconsciously, you are reacting, having conversations in ways that are shaping those things, whether or not you know it. Two, you might be expecting something without actually having a conversation that helps people understand what it is and why it is, which actually runs the risk of setting both of you up for failure because you're expecting it. They know you're expecting something, but not quite sure what it is.
It's not clear.
Yes, and they don't know that they can ask you about it. Or the way that it's like, think about it this way. Think about someone who talks about something they don't even know they're doing, but they talk about it and they send the signal. It's obvious you should know what this is, right? So if I send that signal to you, I've certainly not made it easy or open or safe for you to come back to me and ask, can you tell me more what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so in my own way, without knowing it, I've reduced the chances that you will be actually being able to meet this thing that I need. I don't even realize that I'm not giving you what you need. And at the end of it, whatever it gets created will likely not meet the result need, and it will likely strain our relationship over time.
Why do you think that people do not speak up about if the expectations from both of you are clear or not clear? Like, you know, maybe, you know, if you, I would just say, like, sum it up at the end. Okay, guys, we're going to do this. Is it clear? Any misunderstandings, or is there something that you don't want to do? How do you feel about it? I don't know. It takes 5 minutes, I think, and then it's clear. But I also know when you say this, there will be always people nodding like, oh, yeah. But so maybe the question, they don't understand, or they're scared to say, I don't want to do this.
Maybe.
Actually.
So here's what I hear you doing, unpacking the why, right? What I hear you, like, what could be going on when they nod their head? There's a version of nod their head, which is they legitimately believe they understood at the time.
I got this.
There is a version of nod my head, which is, I don't know this person, and if it's okay to ask, so I'm gonna go figure it out on my own and get out of this conversation right now. And I'll get it done, but I'm gonna go figure it out on my own, right? There could be a version that says, I don't know now, but I'm sure once I get into the problem, I'll figure it out. I always have in the past, right? So I've given you three possibilities. There could be more. Like, but notice there's a lot of those that are fairly well-intended. Like, they're not like, at the end of this, what my hope is that the product will be subpar and that my boss will be upset. Like, no one, like, very few people go into that saying, my goal is to create friction, frustration, or antipathy.
Yes, no one wants that. No. I'm sitting here to just create.
No, fight. By the way, I'm not saying it never happens. I do think there are times where, like, there's a phrase from one of my favorite books called Crucial Conversations that says that which we don't talk out, we tend to act out. Meaning, if we can't have the conversation or something, it'll come out in some other way. It'll come out in my work product. It'll come out in some other thing that we're talking about, right?
But even the body language sometimes, you know, for example, sometimes you see it with relationships that a guy asks, hey, how are you? Are you doing fine? Yeah, I'm okay. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. Actually, I'm not okay at all.
Right. Yeah, you and I at that stage of the game, we're just following the ritual. I don't know that you actually want to, right? So I'm engaging the ritual. I'm not actually engaging the content of the conversation. Yeah.
Indeed.
So in that instance, to ask the question, one of the biggest things that I do try and help leaders, new leaders, in terms of how to be is, and I guess, you know, one is getting curious about, you know, your people and what motivates and energizes them. But the second thing is start seeing if you can get clear on the things that you expect, because you are likely putting that out there. You are likely putting that into the system. Mm-hmm. You are likely putting that onto the work product. And if you don't say it, people are going to have to figure it out by reading between the lines, by trying to figure out, by what you don't say, by what you don't talk about. In other words, they'll start looking for the subtitles because they can't read it in the words, right?
Right. So, yes.
And if that's the dynamic that we start creating, it makes it a lot harder later on when, like you said, when you were talking about your feedback example. Yeah. If there isn't the direct reach out, well, that could be something that then sends you on a trajectory of, it makes it harder later to talk about the hard things.
So, for example, you know, in a situation, a leader has an expectation and it is not clearly actually spoken out. And the persons that he is leading or she is leading didn't meet the expectation. And how should that person at that moment react? Because there's also a reaction mode that you are in. Like, you know, you have to maybe have it for tomorrow, or there's a very, you know, there's a customer coming in. Mm. And, you know, it is nice to say now in a relaxed chair environment, oh, yeah, you have to be patient. But then, you know, it's like just coming up there. And how should you really, really react? That's what would you recommend? Like, as a practical tip.
It's interesting because most of these things are mental habits. let's go back to our definition. The question is, I as a leader am influencing towards something. As you said, the question is in the at that stage of the game, we're under tight time frames, right? You'll always have a result and you'll still always have a working relationship. Those things will never not be at play. You might have some time sensitivity.
Yeah.
And so the two questions to ask yourself, I think it's really one question, but it's some version of what is it that I really want right now?
Yeah.
Right? Think about this. What's really important here? And the reason I would suggest that is I would bet that one of the things that will pop up is we simply need to get this work product up to a certain point so that it works. And there might be some level of urgency that has to take over in relation to that. But I would also make the case that this goes back to that whole leader checking themselves piece is at the very least, I'd want to get myself into the habit of saying, let me check myself in, was I clear in terms of what I asked for?
Okay. Yeah.
What did I get? Okay. So there might be some short term, you and I now need to renegotiate how we're going to do this to be able to get it done. But I also think there's going to be the extra step that says, and let's make sure that you and I, when we've turned this in, let's sit down. And because again, I'm going to use your example, tight time frame, right? We don't have that time right now. At some level, always remember that there's the result, there's the relationship, both of them matter. Most of the time, to your point, under pressure, we likely sacrifice one of those for the other. And what I mean by that is, under pressure, I could sacrifice my working relationship with someone to get the results that I want to make sure that it gets done a certain way. What I could also do is sacrifice the result for the relationship, meaning I might hold off on talking about what I was really expecting at that point because I don't want them to be upset.
Right.
But in both of those instances, I've sacrificed one thing for the other, and that is not sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've got to be able to talk about, listen, here's what matters in terms of the product, but here's also what matters in terms of how we got here. So right now there's a time sensitivity in getting this done. Let's figure out how we get it done. And let's make sure that on the back end of this, you and I sit down and make sure we better understand how we got here. Certainly so we don't get there again.
Yeah. Do you see any differences between female leaders and male leaders in this situation, this particular situation?
Well, here's what's challenging about that, because it goes back to the question you were talking about. I can tell you that if you look at, there's some aggregate data around those things, there might be things that, like, I can think of a couple of assessments I'm aware of where you might find that there's some elements for a female leader where they might gravitate towards being more comfortable asking questions around certain things. And then you've always got variability, right? It depends on the leader themselves. I will certainly tell you that from time to time, you will find some, interestingly though, you will find, of course, any assessment tends to look at differences of gender. And what's funny is you'll sometimes find the differences, but they won't be super statistically significant, meaning it'll be there, but it's not one of those things where they're like, oh, it's so obviously different. It doesn't necessarily show itself so, female leader, we know how different that's going to be, meaning there's variability in both populations.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, about entrepreneurs, like people that just start a business up, sometimes solo, sometimes in a very small team. So some they outsource things like I do. I do a lot of outsourcing. I work with different people.
Sure.
So what would you recommend entrepreneurs that are just starting up? In order to be really good leaders, because you said that leadership is about what was it? Hiring? How did you say it nicely? Can you just repeat?
So that's okay. Yeah, influencing towards a higher good.
Yeah, towards a higher good, right?
Through conversations with others.
Yeah, like what would you recommend them, you know, when they're still in the early stage of building a company? You know, what can they do? Maybe a few things in order to and actually really make the people that they work with feel like what you felt with your high school teacher and graduate school teacher, and what I felt with my primary school teacher, that they feel like, I really loved working here. It's such great being here. And I enjoy the process. I develop myself. And I contribute to this company.
Yeah. Two things come to mind. And the answer to the first one might be subtly different depending upon whether or not, you know, you're by yourself versus you have someone else that you're working with. But
yeah, definitely.
I am absolutely a believer that even if you're a solo act, you are better. You'll always be better with others than you will totally by yourself. And so all I mean by that is, if you're like, I'm starting my own organization, great. Go find three other people who are doing what you're doing and create space so that you're having conversations with them, right?
Nice.
There needs to be a mirror. We all need a mirror back to us about how we're being experienced. Because frankly, when you're working by yourself, it can become, even if you're not someone who say, I'm getting lonely, that's one thing. I know myself well enough that I totally need connection to other people. But I also recognize that individuals who might find themselves in a solo gig, they might have a self-selection bias that they're very comfortable working on their own. That's different than saying they have an accurate view about how at that moment they're being experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd want them to have mirrors, sounding boards, people who are focusing on doing the things that they do.
Yes.
And the other things that I think it does is it sharpens their clarity about the gifts they bring. And hopefully it highlights the blind spots where they're going to need the help of others.
Yeah.
So as quickly as you can, find other people like that. And then, you know, if it's a mastermind group, whatever you want to call it, create some sort of just regular process of checking in and doing some talking around that. Two, if you can, I really do believe, it's funny, this is just probably where I am right now in my own growth stages, is get a mentor, get someone who's, you know, who's further down the path. And by the way, not even the idea, like, I have a business coach and I have a mentor, all right?
Yeah.
And my business, and they do different things. The business coach is very much focused on the fundamentals of the business.
Mm-hmm.
The mentor is in some ways where I'd like to be at certain levels of an organization, but they run a very different organization. They run, you know, I'm working in, you know, leadership development, and they run a logistics organization and a tea company, right? Very different.
Yeah.
But I admire their mind. That I admire how they see problems, right? So
you admire how they see problems?
How they see them.
See,
yeah,
do you also admire the person they are?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah. I highly recognize but they also don't do exactly what I do. I didn't want that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I wasn't looking for someone who was in leadership development and like, no, I want someone who's got a bit of distance from what I do. I want someone who's actually going to ask me questions that are actually from a different point of view, not sitting in the middle of what I do.
Yeah.
So find a community, find a mentor. I mean, both of those are social, right? I guess if I could add a third thing, I know I said two and I'll add a third one, is that if you are working on your own, you're going to be doing a lot of work with subcontractors.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to be finding people that's very targeted. This is what you're doing. You're building my profile. You're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember we were having that conversation about really getting good at clarifying what you expect?
Yes.
This is a perfect opportunity to treat every single one of those as an opportunity to get incredibly aware of how you're setting what you expect with other people. Now, why does that matter? Because, Austin, if you build the organization and you hire people, right, you're going to be doing that anyway, except it's a much longer term relationship, right? You're building that and with this recognition that you're also building the relationship as you go as well.
Yes.
So at the very least, I wouldn't want someone to say, well, I don't have direct reports, therefore I can't do these things. It's like, no, 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 no. Those opportunities are there in any service provider if we want to take advantage of them. So
yes, yes.
Those would be the three things I would point to.
Cool. Really nice. About this, you know, this board, mastery board and all. After I did 5 episodes of the podcast, I said to 2 very good friends, but they work in totally different industries and also totally different than I am. I said, you know, I need a sounding board in YouTube, please. And they are totally different than also each other. One is very, you know, they can do a lot of risk management and I'm not risk manager. I'm like, sky is the limit. Everything is possible. I'm like, so I need someone that is just like saying, stop for a moment. But it worked really, really well. But the mirror, again, sometimes the mirror hurts. Eh? You just hear diehard all these feedback. But this was really, really nice, Kyle. I really appreciate this. Is there a
pleasure?
Before we just go to your last message, actually, I would like to ask, like, you know, where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you are doing? You know, we already know the podcast.
Sure. Yeah, I would. I'm pretty simple around those things.
Okay.
You can certainly hear a bit more about my the way I teach from my podcast. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's funny. Ninth Edge, of course, has a website. It's fine. I am not the most social media savvy person in the world, and I came to peace with that a while ago.
Hmm.
And part of it, honestly, is not that I don't see it's wonderful, that it has wonderful stuff, and I absolutely admire people who understand it better than I. It's that one of the things I like about podcasts is probably one of the things that keeps me sometimes from avoiding some of the other social media elements, and it's this: when you and I sit down, we create a conversation, we create context, we have an understanding of where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably struggle with that more when you've got to tighten the message down to something really small. It's like, that's good. I'm glad people can do it. So that's my way of saying I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram. I've never been on Facebook.
Never been on Facebook?
Never. Never.
Is this a generation difference, Kyle? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe. It might be. It's funny, my master's degree is actually in communication. So I guess what I would say is I have such a belief in the role that context plays in creating meaning for others,
mm-hmm.
is that I just never found myself very good at putting something out that would be, if it didn't have context connected to it, I wouldn't know how somebody would read it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not my strong suit. And that's okay.
So yeah. I would say then the Switch and the Dial podcast, and Apple podcast, Spotify, and all the channels.
All the channels.
LinkedIn, Kyle Cordaway.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kyle. This was this was amazing. Can we just talk a little bit longer? I would say, like, after I stop recording.
An absolute pleasure.
Really, really good. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate you asking.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have loved this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. You can find me on Instagram at Ozkan Ozlem, at OZKANOZLEM. If you want to let me know what you have enjoyed, or you want to share your takeaways with me, or you want to let me know what you want to hear in the next episode of Bridging, find the latest post on Instagram and leave a comment or ask a question. Thank you so much for listening.